Fightful.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today will be the fourth part of our Traditions of Glastonbury series. This is written by E. Raymond Capt, and today's episode is subtitled Vetusta Ecclesia. The most hallowed of all the traditions of Glastonbury is the story of Mary, the mother of Jesus, ending her last days on earth at Glastonbury. She is said to have been interred in its sacred ground to become the first of a long list of saints buried at Glastonbury. The list, still extant, recording the names of those buried at Glastonbury, is most illustrious and unique, superior to any other cemetery in the world. Since time immemorial, the old cemetery, alongside the Mary's Chapel, has been called the most holiest ground on earth, the most hallowed spot in Christendom, and the burial place of the saints. William of Malmesbury describes it as held in great reverence on account of the number of saints, martyrs, and confessors who had found a resting place, either by ending their days here, or whose bones, owing to its character for superior sanctity, had been translated hither. For it seems to have been the custom at Glastonbury, in early ages, to place the relics of some saint in a magnificent shrine to attract a multitude of worshippers. It, with the venerated Vetusta Ecclesia, was called the Tomb of the Saints. When the cemetery was excavated by archaeologists, it was found to bear ample evidence of long and intensive use. Slab-lined graves of the earliest period were found packed together in an endeavour to obtain burial as near as possible to the oratories and tombs of the saints. Gildas, the historian, ended his last days at Glastonbury, as did St. David, King Cole, or Hoel, the father of Queen Helena and grandfather of Constantine, was also laid to rest there. 12 disciples of St. Philip are reported to be buried in this venerable cemetery. The possibility of Mary having been brought to Britain by Joseph of Arimathea and her spending her remaining years on earth here would not be inconsistent with the last New Testament account we have of Mary. We know that Mary, after the Ascension, dwelt among the disciples. We also know that the disciples had to flee Jerusalem for their very lives. It is not unreasonable to assume that Joseph, being both Mary's uncle by marriage, and thus her legal guardian, and a wealthy, influential provincial Roman senator, would have been the logical choice to take and protect the Blessed Mary. The scriptural record tells us that as Jesus hung on the cross, he tenderly committed his mother into John's safe keeping, who led Mary away from the tragic scene before her son expired. Speaking of John, the scriptures read, "From that hour, that disciple took her unto his own." Ias ta idia. Idia is a possessive pronoun. The word home is not in the original text. The translators added it. Jesus definitely entrusted his mother to the care of John, but the request did not necessarily mean that John would see her safely provided for. In any case, it seems quite reasonable to expect John to turn to Joseph of Arimathea for the necessary protection. One early document, the Magna Glastoniensis Tabula at Naworth Castle, bears this out. It reads, "Saint John, while evangelizing Ephesus, made Joseph paranymphos," meaning guardian. According to one tradition of Glastonbury, after Mary's death, a building of wattle construction, 60 feet in length and 26 feet wide, following the pattern of the Wilderness Tabernacle, was built over her home. The building became known as the Lignia Basilica, or the Vetusta Ecclesia, and the Elder Church, or Old Church. Later, it was called the Caldi Church, or Church of the Refugees. The existence of a mud and wattle church at Glastonbury is historically proven by two royal charters which are still extant. Both were actually signed in the Lignia Basilica, one by King Inn in AD 704 and the other by King Canute in AD 1032. We can believe that Joseph, after the death of Mary, decreed that the place where she was buried should be forever dedicated to the worship of Christ. Later, he and his disciples would live together there, as a community, to ensure the perpetuation of worship on this holy spot. Malguin of Avalon, or Melchinus, the uncle of St. David, in his Historia de Rebus Britannicus, written around AD 540, wrote, "In this church, they worshipped and taught the people the true Christian faith. After about 15 years, Mary died and was buried at Glastonbury. The disciples died in succession and were buried in the cemetery." In another reference to Mary, Malguin wrote, "The Isle of Avalon, greedy of burials, received thousands of sleepers, among whom Joseph de Marmor from Arimathea, by name, entered his perpetual sleep. And he lies in a bifurcated line next the southern angle of the oratory, made of circular wattles, by 13 inhabitants of the place, over the powerful, adorable Virgin." In yet another reference to Mary, Malguin wrote concerning the saints buried at Glastonbury, "who there awaited the day of resurrection under the protection of the Mother of God." The implication in both statements is that Mary, as well as the other disciples, including Joseph, were buried under the Wattle Church. This would further explain why the ancient church was called Mary's Chapel, as well as St. Joseph's Chapel. Malmesbury's Acts of the Kings, written around AD 1135, also contains an enigmatic statement that adds to the subtle suggestion that Mary is buried at Glastonbury. Speaking of Mary's Chapel, "the very floor, inlaid with polished stone, and the side of the altar itself above and beneath, are laden with a multitude of relics." Then follows these words, "where also one can notice in the pavement, stones are carefully set side by side, either in triangularly or squarely, and sealed with lead, under which, I believe, some sacred secret to be contained. I shall not be an injury to religion." It is intriguing to believe that the secret referred to is the actual burial place of the Virgin Mary. The Virgin Mary was deified by the Roman Catholic Church in AD 600. She is held in affectionate memory, but was never deified by the British Church. Christ alone, from the beginning and to date, is the only deity of the Church. Mary is regarded as but an instrument in the divine purpose of God. There is no passage in the Bible that shows that Jesus regarded his mother as divine. On the occasion when his disciples told him that his mother and brethren were present, he asked, "Who is my mother?" and gives the explanation. Naturally, he regarded her dearly. It is also well known that the Roman Catholic Church dedications to St. Mary did not begin before AD 1130, a rite not practiced by the British Church, the one exception being Mary's Chapel at Glastonbury, over 1,000 years earlier. Thus, this early dedication had to be for a reason other than deification. Perhaps this was a continuation of the tradition that Jesus himself dedicated to his mother the little temple he had built with his own hands at Avalon. The late Reverend Lionel Smithet Lewis, vicar of Glastonbury, spent years researching the validity of traditions placing Jesus and his mother Mary in Britain. He points out the unique place of honour accorded to Glastonbury and the Virgin Mary by the Roman Catholic Church from earliest times to date. He states, "No one, better than they, the Roman Catholic Church, know the facts of her, Mary's life, and no one better than they espouse them. And over the ages, the holy ground at Glastonbury has been constantly referred to by them as Our Lady's Dowry. As such, it has always been recognised by the Roman Catholic sisterhood, who never ceased to pray daily for this hallowed spot at Glastonbury. Our Lady's Dowry." Reverend Lewis may have had in mind the French convent in Alexandria, conducted by nuns who were members of the old French nobility. They taught that St. Joseph of Arimathea took the Blessed Virgin with him to Britain, and that she died there. When printing was invented, the first book to come off the press was the Bible. Soon afterwards, Wynkyn de Worde printed the life story of St. Joseph, and about the same time, Richard Pynson, AD 1560-1520, printed two accounts of the Arimathean story from old documents, one of which carried these interesting lines. "Now hear how Joseph came into England, but at that time it was called Britain. Then 15 years with Our Lady, as I understand, Joseph waited still to serve her, he was sane." The length of time, 15 years, could be the number of years Joseph was Mary's paranymphos, bridesman or guardian, from AD 33 to 48. The old ecclesiastical records of Glastonbury, confirmed by many other ancient writers, also state that the Virgin Mary departed this life in the year AD 48. Several other early documents are reputed to bear this out, one being the Cotton Manuscript, Titus, and another, the Novo Legend Anglo by John Capgrave, the principal of the Augustine Friars in England, AD 1466. Coinciding with this, the old Glastonbury Abbey records officially declare that St. Mary's Chapel, later erected over the Wattle Church and built by St. David, was raised over her remains. Melchinus, a native of Avalon, known also as Malguin, Celtic bard, historian and philosopher, who lived around AD 450, wrote, "Ye elde church was built over the grave of the Blessed Mary." The latter manuscript particularly informs us that John gave Mary into the trust of Joseph under the peculiar title of being her bridesman, that he was present at her death, as were other apostles and disciples, who came at her bidding to be by her side as Mary breathed her last. Over the centuries, many places have claimed to be Mary's resting place. In more modern times, the Roman Catholic Church named the Chapel of the Dormiton near Jerusalem as the site. There a ledge is pointed out, where Mary's koinesis, or falling asleep, took place. However, it, nor other places in the East, have withstood the probe of investigation. None of the disciples of the Gospel mention her tomb. Saint Jerome, recording the sacred places of the East during the 4th century AD by special commission of the Church at Rome, makes no reference to the burial place of Mary. The logical reason is that she was not interred in Judea or in Rome. The Gnostics, in the 4th century AD, started a legend that St. Mary lived at Bethlehem after her son's death, till an angel came to say that she must die, and that she was born in a cloud to Jerusalem, and carried by the apostles to Gethsemane, where her soul was received by St. Gabriel, and carried to paradise. The story continues that the apostles bore her body to the valley of Jehoshaphat and laid it in a new tomb, that the Lord appeared, ordered St. Michael to bring her soul from paradise and reunite it to her body, which was then entrusted to angels and carried to heaven. St. Epiphanus, AD 315-402, Bishop of Constantia or Salamis, denounced the story as, "The whole thing is foolish and strange, and is a device and deceit of the devil." The saintly Pope Gelasius condemned this assumption of Mary as heretical in the year AD 494. In spite of these rejections, the Festival of the Assumption was instituted by the Emperor Maurice at the beginning of the 7th century AD. Charlemagne rejected it. His son Louis accepted it in AD 818. Today, under August the 15th, it is found in the Roman Breviary. In AD 166, Bishop Eleutherius, at the request of King Lucius of Britain, sent two legates, or holy men, Faganus and Deruvianus, who baptized the king and his family at Glastonbury. Upon discovering the abandoned Wattle Church, constructed by Joseph and his companions, and dedicated to Mary, these two holy men elected to stay and form a religious community. They lived there 9 years, and in memory of the first 12, chose 12 from their converts to dwell on the island, as anchorites in the separate spots occupied by them. King Lucius confirmed to these 12 converts the grants of 12 portions of land for their sustenance and their successors, the number always being 12. The new community restored the Vetusta Ecclesia of the Virgin, which was fast falling into decay. Then they added an oratory of stonework, which they dedicated to Christ and the holy apostles, Peter and Paul. Successive converts maintained the community and its buildings, doing such repairs and substitution of parts as required. For centuries, the fame of the dedication of the Vetusta Ecclesia attracted settlers from the northern parts of Britain to inhabit the island. Pilgrims of all ranks, holy, learned and pious, visited it. St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland, visited Glastonbury about AD 433, where he found 12 hermits living apart in huts. He taught them to live together, in common, and appointed himself their abbot. He held the office of abbot until his death in AD 472, at the great age of 111 years. His Irish mission lasted 47 years, and for 39 years he was the abbot of Glastonbury. He is said to have been buried beside the altar in the Vetusta Ecclesia on the southern side. Saint Beninus, St. Patrick's disciple and third successor to his Irish episcopate, came to Glastonbury AD 460 and succeeded him as abbot. Another early name associated with the Vetusta Ecclesia is St. David, or Dewisant, born around AD 520. His contemporaries were Cadoc, Padarn, Samson, Docu, Tilo, Comgall, Brendan, Gildas, and the Irish Finian. One story related by Malmesbury is that David came from Wales with 7 bishops, of whom he was primate, to dedicate the old church to the Blessed Virgin Mary. On the night before the ceremony, Jesus appeared to David in a vision and said that he had already done so, so David must not. He himself had long before dedicated the church in honour of his mother, and the sacrament ought not to be profaned by human repetition. However, David immediately set about building another church, lest they should seem to come out for naught. The new church was a sort of chancel to the east of the old church, a quendam cancellum. So as not to confuse his building with the old church, David set up a pillar to the north and in line with the east wall of the earlier building. On it was a brass plate inscribed with a statement of the distance from the pillar to the centre of the east wall. The pillar was reported as still standing under Henry VIII. The foundation of just such a pillar was found in AD 1931 by Dr. Armitage Robinson, and the spot is marked today with an iron post and notice. David died around AD 589 and was buried in the grounds of his own monastery, although there is a story that his remains were later brought to Glastonbury, as were the bodies of many saints. In AD 708, King Inna, or Inni, the son of Cendred of Wessex, presented his famous charter to the Lignia Basilica, which reads in part, "To the ancient church, situate in the place called Glastonbury, which church the great high priest and chiefest minister, formerly through his own ministry and that of angels, sanctified by many an unheard of miracle to himself and the ever Virgin Mary, as was formerly revealed to St. David, do grant." The great high priest and chiefest minister are clearly a reference to Christ himself, and this would seem to affirm that he personally ministered there. There is certainly a confirmation of our interpretation of the Gildas statement that Christ afforded his light and a knowledge of his precepts. The ancient church referred to by King Inna was, of course, the Little Wattle Church, built perhaps by Joseph of Arimathea. Today the site is covered by the ruins of the 12th century Church of St. Mary, known as Mary's or the Lady's Chapel. In AD 719, King Inna built another church. This was the major ecclesia of the Apostles Peter and Paul. It was much larger and more imposing and situated a short distance to the east of the Vetusta Ecclesia. William of Malmesbury mentions that several basilicas stood in this place. The first and oldest, that built by the 12 disciples of St. Philip and St. James, stood west of all the others. The second was made by St. David in honour of the Virgin Mary, at the east part of the oldest, after he had prepared a solemn dedication by our Lord himself. The third was built by the 12 pious men from the north part of Britain. This also stood east of the Vetusta Ecclesia. The fourth and largest was constructed by King Inna in honour of the Saviour and the Apostles Peter and Paul for the soul of his brother Mules. This, the major ecclesia, stood east of all the others, while the Vetusta Ecclesia stood west of all the others. King Inna also founded a school at Rome for the education of British subjects. He instituted Peter's Pence, which he at first called the King's Arms. He enjoined every subject who possessed in his home any one kind of goods to the value of 20 pence that he should pay a penny to the Pope yearly on Lammas Day, the festival of the wheat harvest. Inna assumed the habit of a monk in the year AD 726 and died about the year AD 728 in Rome. Inna's monastery maintained a great reputation until it, along with many other monasteries, was ravaged and despoiled by the Danes in the 6th century AD. The next worthy, recorded in the annals of Glastonbury Abbey, was the great Englishman Dunstan, whose posthumous fame caused large sums of money and gifts to flow into the abbey coffers for centuries. According to the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, Dunstan was born in AD 925 in the neighbourhood of Glastonbury, probably at Boltonsborough, where a church is dedicated to him. He was educated as a monk at the Abbey School, then a celebrated seminary of learning. He is said to have excelled in the arts of music, painting and goldsmith's work. About AD 943, some records give AD 936, Dunstan was appointed abbot of Glastonbury by King Edmund, the brother and successor to King Athelstan. Being a pupil of the Benedictines, and favoured by Edmund, Dunstan established Glastonbury as the first Benedictine monastery in England. King Edmund's reign was short. He was murdered at Pucklechurch by Leofa, a robber, AD 946, and was interred at Glastonbury by Abbot Dunstan. King Edred succeeded Edmund, and during his 9-year reign the abbey prospered. Dunstan became the king's chief minister, as well as abbot of Glastonbury. He seems to have hated the married state, perhaps influenced by his own disappointment as a young man. By instituting celibacy for the clergy, which had not yet become a dogma of the Church of Rome, Dunstan made himself many enemies among the married clergy. On the death of King Edred, AD 955, his nephew, Edwy, King Edmund's son, succeeded to the throne. He soon quarrelled with Abbot Dunstan, who had reproved him for an illegal marriage. The king had Dunstan banished from the kingdom. He did not remain long abroad, though, for when the unpopular King Edwy's subjects deposed him and chose his brother Edgar to be king, Dunstan was recalled from exile. King Edgar appointed him Bishop of Worcester, AD 957, and in AD 958, Bishop of London. In the following year, Dunstan was elected Archbishop of Canterbury, and he died in AD 988 and was buried at Glastonbury. In AD 1082, Aelnothus, or Egilnoth, the last of the Saxon abbots, was replaced by a Norman abbot named Terstinus, or Terstan. The year following his installation, Terstan had an aggravated quarrel with his monks, who refused to accept some changes. The new abbot wanted to substitute the chant of William of Fescamp for the Gregorian. The dispute ran so high that the abbot called in armed bowmen to force the monks to obey. Some of the monks took refuge in the great church, but this sacred spot did not protect them. Several monks were killed, and many were wounded. The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle of AD 1083 records how arrows stuck in the crucifix which stood above the altar, and then wretched monks lay around the altar, and some crept under it, and blood ran down the steps. Thurston, after the custom of the Norman abbots, commenced rebuilding the great church in a more ornate style. His successor, Abbot Herluinus, in AD 1101, however, pulled down most of the church started by Thurston, for the reason that he did not think it was grand enough for the magnitude of the revenues pouring into the abbey. Succeeding abbots continued to build and rebuild the great church, always keeping the Vetusta Ecclesia separate from the major ecclesia. The most noted of these rebuildings took place under the direction of Henry of Blois, appointed abbot in AD 1126 by his brother King Stephen. According to Adam of Domerum, Henry, he built this monastery from the foundation, a bell tower, a chapter house, cloister, lavatory, refectory, dormitory and infirmary with a chapel, a splendid large palace, an exterior gateway of squared stones, a large brew house and stabling for many horses, giving many ornaments to the church. Probably the church built by Abbot Herluin. Henry found the precious sapphire altar, bestowed on Glastonbury by St. David, hidden in a recess in the church of St. Mary from the time of the wars with the Danes. He had it magnificently adorned with gold, silver, and precious stones. This consecrated portable sapphire altar had been presented to St. David by the Patriarch of Jerusalem with other costly gifts when he visited the Holy City. Henry de Bois died in AD 1171 and was succeeded by Abbot Robert, who ruled the abbey for 7 years. Following his death, King Henry II held the abbey in his own hands, no abbot being appointed until AD 1189, entrusting the management of it to his chamberlain, Peter Marchi, a Cluniac monk. In AD 1184, a great fire occurred, which consumed the greater part of the Glastonbury Abbey, including the venerable Wattle Church. Adam of Domerham gives the following account. In the following summer, that is to say, St. Urban's Day, May the 24th, 1184, the whole of the monastery, except a chamber with a chapel constructed by Abbot Robert, into which the monks afterwards betook themselves, and the bell tower, built by Bishop Henry, were consumed by fire. No reason is given for the cause of the fire, but it is believed to have started from curtains ignited by candles during a windstorm. Adam also recorded these moving words. The beautiful buildings, lately erected by Henry of Blois, and the church, a place so venerated by all, and the shelter of so many saints, are reduced to a heap of ashes. What groans, what tears, what pains arose as they, the monks, saw what had happened and pondered over the loss they had suffered. The confusion into which their relics were thrown, the loss of treasure, not only in gold and silver, but in stuffs and silks, in books, and the rest of the ornaments of the church, must even provoke to tears, and justly so, those who far away do but hear of these things. The greatest loss, however, was the famous library, considered the finest collection of books of the period, including records covering 1,000 years of Glastonbury Abbey history. In the years preceding its destruction, a large number of monks were constantly employed in the abbey cloisters, illuminating missals and transcribing not only works of theology and devotion, but of classical and general literature. Many of the books were illuminated on vellum, bound in richly torn leather and mounted with silver and gold. Leland, who visited the library shortly before the Great Fire, wrote that he was so overwhelmed with awe at the sight of such vast treasures of antiquity that for a time he dared not enter. Among the books and records may have been the writings of those who had personally known Joseph, and perhaps even Jesus, during his sojourn in Avalon before his ministry.
You're listening to Radio Arian at Radio.